Dear podcast listener, before we get to our new episode, we're doing something special here at Latino USA, and we're sharing our staff with you, our listeners. So sitting with me in the studio is our editor, Sofia Parisacá. So welcome to the studio, Sofia.
Thank you.
So why do you like working at Latino USA?
I love working with the reporters, and I get to work on so many different kinds of stories here, which I think is just a blessing because it can be really hard and it can be really fun. And it just day to day changes so much. And for me, it's like challenging my narrative storytelling mind is just something that I love to do. And I get to do every single day here.
So what's the favorite story that kind of sticks out for you from this year?
I love this story that I got to work on with two of our reporters here about Richard Oakes, who's an activist in the Red Power movement in the 1960s. And his story is just amazing. I'd never heard of him before. And this is like this big historical piece that we did where we got to go back in his life and find out how he got involved politically and where his family comes from and all of that in a way that kind of imparted the importance of that history, but also was really beautiful. To me, like, that's exactly what we should be doing, is telling these stories as authentically as possible and in a way that is part of history that you may not know, but like really does impact where we are today.
You worked on a piece about the largest health clinic in the United States that's free and really dedicated to serving people without health insurance. It turns out that a lot of those people in Chicago are Latinos and Latinas.
Exactly. Yeah. We've been working on this story for months now, and it's one that I'm actually getting to report on, which I love because that's my background. And we went out to Chicago and spent 3 days there at the largest free clinic in the United States, kind of immersed in the halls of the clinic, talking to patients, following patients through, talking to families, talking to staff there, nurses, and trying to get a sense of like what it means to be undocumented in this country from a health perspective. And also, I think like what are the effects physically and mentally of living undocumented in this country right now? And not everyone who goes there was undocumented, but they take anybody who doesn't have insurance. And in this country, it's very, very difficult to get health insurance if you don't have any kind of documentation.
Sofia, thank you so much for speaking about your work at Latino USA.
Thank you.
So as we're getting to the end of the year, it's really a good time to think about contributing. And, you know, just think about all the great stories that we brought you in 2019. And so when you make an end of the year gift to your NPR station, you'll be supporting the stations and the stories that matter to you. So support Latino USA and support your local public radio station by donating today. Visit donate.npr.org/Latino USA. And thank you. Gracias. Dear listener, for this episode of Latino USA, we're going to do something a little bit different. Now, normally when we interview people who speak Spanish, we translate all of their interviews into English. Today, we're not going to translate any of the Spanish because we wanted to preserve their voices and let them communicate their stories with their own words. So we're going to ask you to listen, even if you don't understand every single word. We think that you're going to get a lot from this story. And if you'd like a transcript of everything translated, you can find it online at latinousa.org. And we should mention that parts of this story might be disturbing for some of our listeners. Here's the show.
In a health clinic in Chicago, Marta Flores is receiving some news. Her doctor walks into the exam room, and she barely closes the door before she gets right to it. Marta is clearly taken aback. The doctor tells her her high blood sugar means something else.
Entonces, con este test tenemos diagnóstico de diabetes. Es un diagnóstico nuevo para usted.
Tengo diabetes.
Sí, sí, sí. Tiene diabetes, sí.
Ay. ¿Y se puede borrar?
Nunca se borra, pero se controla.
This is a new diagnosis for Marta, but she's been coming to this clinic for 10 years. She's 66 years old and originally from El Salvador. Marta doesn't say much or ask many questions after she hears that she has diabetes. But after the physical exam, she seems to get less calm.
Pregúnteme todo lo que quiera.
Bueno, lo que yo le estoy escuchando, doctora, es que se me está complicando porque más pastillas y la diabetes esto, y todo esto viene a repercutir cuando ya estoy viejita.
Bueno, con los años...
Me da nervios.
Bueno, con los años a todos nosotros nos pasa. Hay más enfermedades con los años, con la edad. Eso es así.
Marta is also worried about what her daughter will say when she hears about her diagnosis.
Problema que voy a tener con mi hija.
¿Por qué?
A veces me agarraba un poquito de jugo de naranja y le echaba hielo, nada menos anoche. Ay, bien rico. Y dijo, mía, no estoy tomando jugo de naranja, eso tiene mucho dulce.
Diabetes can be genetic, but it can also be brought on by diet, especially sugary drinks.
Agua no me gusta. Ni porque tenemos agua ahí buena de bote. No me gusta el agua. Yo siento que me pone el estómago así y bien feo el agua.
Marta says that when she sits down to eat, she forgets all about what the doctors tell her she should be eating.
Mire, a mí me gusta en la mañana un huevito picadito así con cebolla y una rodadita de pan.
Then Marta begins to list to me all of her favorite foods.
Me gusta avena también. La banana, yo soy fanática de la banana. Incluso que ando una, mil, por si me da hambre.
She opens her purse and shows me the banana she has stashed there.
O por si paso por ahí, pedacito de pan. Pero es malo para la diabetes. El pan y la banana.
I want to hear more about her banana fanaticism, but we're interrupted by her cell phone buzzing.
Me está llamando mi hija, quizá. Aló, ladies.
It's Martha's daughter calling to see when she can pick her up. And Martha gives her the news.
Sabe, hay mala noticia. Tengo diabetes.
From NPR and Futuro Media, I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, Latino USA is a fly on the wall at the largest free health clinic in the country. We hear the intimate conversations people have at the doctor's office. Going to see the doctor is almost always a stressful and vulnerable experience. It's a place where your anxieties about your body and your life are super heightened, and where everything can change with just a few words from your doctor. Undocumented people generally can't access insurance, and so their healthcare options are very limited. But one of the places they can go are free health clinics. Free clinics have only been around in the United States starting in the 1960s and 70s. They were places that popped up to deal with the growing number of young people who were runaways or uninsured or addicted to drugs.
What's a free clinic? It's where our growing up children go for help when they can't or won't come home.
The first one was the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic, which came to be after a flood of young people ended up in San Francisco for the summer of love.
The dentists, doctors, lawyers, and other professionals are here as volunteers. They treat all the embarrassing ailments of the youngsters. Venereal disease, drug complaints, hepatitis from shooting drugs with dirty needles, pregnancy problems. Here, for example, was developed that form of teenage group therapy, where the kids just talk out their emotions.
Yeah. You don't think I felt that hurt when she said she couldn't see me?
Oh, yeah, you felt that hurt.
Today, there are 28 million uninsured people in the United States, and free clinics can often be their only safety net. We're going to spend time in one of those clinics. In fact, it's the largest free health clinic in the United States. It's called Community Health in Chicago, and it only serves people who don't have health insurance. Now, it's almost impossible for journalists to get behind-the-scenes access to medical centers because there are a lot of laws, and rightly so, that protect patients' privacy. So when Community Health in Chicago told us that they would give us full access to their facilities, we saw this as a rare opportunity to observe the daily dramas that unfold there. We spent 3 days sitting in on doctors' exams and talking with patients and staff. And all of this to try to capture a snapshot of how undocumented life manifests itself both physically and mentally. Now, at the beginning of this show, you heard producer Sofia Paliza Ka. This past summer, she flew to Chicago along with producer Antonia Cerejido. And Antonia is going to take it from here.
The clinic is located in Chicago's Ukrainian Village, a quiet residential neighborhood. It takes Gabriel Dominguez half an hour by car to get to the clinic every morning. Gabriel is the custodian at Community Health, and he is in charge of opening the clinic's unassuming glass doors every day around 8 o'clock.
Soy como que el motor de aquí, indirectamente, ¿no?
Gabriel has a kind face, transition lenses, and a lot of tools hanging off of his belt loop.
Soy como tipo vigilante, como tipo de todo aquí.
He leads me inside the building, and I thank him for letting me in. But as soon as I start to leave in search of the front desk, he stops me. He lets me know that he's like me. He documents the world.
Yeah. Entonces yo participo también. Ahorita yo no estoy ahí porque yo estoy grabando, ¿no?
He pulls up Facebook to show me videos he took of his Zumba classes. He even bought a stabilizer, which makes the videos look very professional.
Yo pongo el tripié.
¿Sos el único hombre?
No, somos... A veces hay más mujeres que hombres, sí. Yeah.
¿Qué los hombres no van a...?
Porque tienen pena. Es que no sé bailar bien, es que no se trata de eso, se trata de que te muevas y simplemente rompas las barreras. Si de por sí es difícil la vida y luego te pones barreritas, peor.
Over the next 3 days, we meet a lot of characters.
Okay,
let's go do that.
Do you have time?
Yeah, the patient's not here yet.
So I leave you
here.
I'm
Sofia,
yeah. No, I know. Sorry about that.
Hello.
And you are?
Antonia.
If you were to take a God's eye view of the clinic, while my fellow producer Sofia and I spent time there, we would look like Pac-Men, gliding around a maze of corridors, chasing patients. And the patient's path through this maze starts at the front desk. According to the front desk, Monday and Thursday mornings are their busiest times.
No sé por qué, pero son los días más ocupados. Los pacientes llegan enfermos porque comieron mucho en el fin de semana y vienen a una consulta.
This is Dolores Mendez, and her name could not be more perfect for her position.
We were talking to our patients. He asked me what my name was, and he said, well, I forgot. Like, you know, it's very easy. When you have pain, just think of me. That's my name, Dolores.
Overall, the clinic sees 8,500 patients a year. To be able to get care here, an individual patient must have no insurance and have an annual salary of under $30,000. The clinic doesn't treat kids because Illinois provides health care to minors regardless of status. Once a patient checks in, they sit in the skylit waiting room. Their names are called out one by one.
Jose Ingles, estación 4, por favor.
They take their vitals.
Yeah, empty those pockets. We don't want anything else.
And then the patients are led to their appointment. There are neurologists, ophthalmologists, even a dentist, who will extract your teeth while you listen to calming retro jams. The exam rooms in the clinic are laid out in a U shape. The nucleus of the clinic is in the center of the U, and it's an open space with computers and chairs where doctors and staff hang out. Every morning and afternoon, the staff gathers here for a briefing called The Huddle, which Sofia caught on the first day.
On the little paper on the board, and I think that's all we have. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Very quickly.
The morning huddle is led by Emilia Pilch. She's from Poland, moved here 13 years ago.
Economy in Poland isn't that great, I guess. So we just came here with my parents.
The Chicago metropolitan area has the largest Polish community in the United States. And the clinic reflects that. About a third of patients are Polish speakers. And that's part of why we wanted to visit Community Health. Almost all of the patients we spoke to there were immigrants. Emilia briefs the doctors, but she also maintains this leaderboard at the center of the clinic.
A provider is like really, really good at it. We give them a shout out during the huddle.
So it's this whiteboard with names, like the high score ranking screen in an arcade game, but all the names on it are residents. And instead of a point total, the categories are things like
diabetics with A1C less than 9%.
things us non-doctors wouldn't understand.
That means that their diabetes is well-ish controlled, so anything over 9%.
And the residents are pretty into these rankings.
It's pretty competitive, to be honest. Like, it's so tiny, but they're like, they always look for the names. And some of them have been on there for, like, you know, 8-10 times, the same name. So they're very, like, you know. So we kind of... Dr. Rios, you're awesome.
Dr. Matilde Rios interrupts Amelia as she scours the board for her own name.
Yes, you were there. Well, it's for the residents only, so, you know.
Oh, it's only for residents?
Yes. She's the doctor who diagnosed Martha at the beginning of the story.
You have to tell them the story.
Oh, she's told me. I've heard about the CADs.
And she's often the center of attention. I'm told I must hear the story behind the name of her cat, Nacho.
Okay, my grandson gave me a joke. What is a cheese that is not yours? Nacho cheese. Not your cheese. It's a good one. Yeah.
Dr. Rios has been a volunteer doctor at the clinic for 8 years, and so she has a special connection with many of her patients. Both Antonia and I spent a lot of time with her and in her exam room. Between appointments, Dr. Rios told Antonia a little bit more about herself.
Dr. Rios, like many of her patients, is an immigrant. She came to the U.S. from Uruguay in the late 70s. At the time, there was a military dictatorship in power, and the administration was targeting civilians they believed to be part of a guerrilla terrorist group.
But they were also taken to jail because you have a family who was involved. They would take you to.
And you were afraid?
Yes, yes, we were. We were. That's why we emigrated.
Her family moved to Chicago in 1983, and Dr. Rios started her career in private practice. She worked for 3 decades and then decided to retire. But if you can't tell, Dr. Rios has a lot of energy. And so she started to get restless. And one night, while she was Googling at 2 a.m., something she told me she actually does very frequently, she learned about this clinic, Community Health, and thought it was exactly the kind of place that she would like to volunteer at. But when she first started coming, she didn't exactly feel welcome.
I didn't know anybody. And I saw all these professors from Northwestern Rush walking, talking, giving classes. And I said, what am I doing here? Because I didn't know anybody. I was going to quit. I felt very uncomfortable.
But then she got a little encouragement.
Somebody from the front desk came and said, oh, my God, Dr. Rios, all the patients like you so much. They all want to come back to you. So I said, well, okay, so maybe I can do something good here.
Matilde is retired. She doesn't get paid to see patients. None of the doctors do. It takes over 1,000 volunteers to keep Community Health running.
The way Community Health runs is that all of the doctors are volunteers. Some are retired, but many are full-time doctors who spend a few hours a month at the clinic. And all of the prescriptions provided at Community Health are free for patients, even really expensive things like insulin. They even have their own pharmacy. Community Health was founded in 1993 by an Italian immigrant. A kidney doctor, he was concerned with the number of uninsured people in Chicago, so he opened a storefront clinic that took patients twice a week. The demand grew so much that in 2010, they even opened a second clinic to serve more people. But then in 2014, the Affordable Care Act went into effect.
And millions of Americans finally had the same chance to buy quality, affordable health care and the peace of mind that comes with it as everybody else.
And many of the clinic's patients were able to get coverage for the first time. In fact, so many that Community Health decided to close their second clinic because of a drop in demand.
Buenos dias.
But at least one patient Antonia spoke to felt that getting insurance actually put him in a worse position.
José Inglés stopped going to Community Health when he began getting insurance through his work. But now he wants to return to the clinic. The front desk tries to explain to him that now that he's insured, he can't.
Usted ya no puede seguir continuando recibiendo servicios aquí en la clínica porque usted dijo que tiene esa aseguranza. Okay, ¿me puede mostrar la carta, por favor?
José hands the front desk person a letter. In it, he formally declines his new health insurance. He tells her he's decided to stay uninsured in order to be able to keep going to Community Health. The letter is taken behind the desk to Vicky Chester, the patient services manager. Vicky tells me that this circumstance is not that rare.
oftentimes people will elect to cancel their insurance for the sake of returning here, which is not something that we encourage them to do.
What this means is that Jose would lose coverage in case of an emergency, since community health only offers preventative care. But Jose tells me that it's worth the risk for him.
Y aquí están siendo mejor.
Because he feels financially that he isn't getting by month to month. Again, he's willing to risk a surprise visit to the emergency room because his insurance is costing him so much.
Y las cremas que me dieron allá no me sirvieron para nada. Y aparte, pues, perdí dinero.
Under his works insurance, he says he is now being charged $5,000 to cover the cost of his lotions to take care of his eczema. When he was a community health patient, they were free. I want to go check out where all these free meds are, and so I find myself in the clinic's pharmacy. Dr. Rios is there, and she lets me know the lowdown on one of her patients.
So we are here because we have a patient with very high cholesterol, called familial hypercholesterolemia, and she's a medication. She's taking a medication who lower the cholesterol. What I think now, she may not be taking the medication. That's something many times we find, that they prescribe the medication, they get the medication from here, but they don't take. So she's coming today. I have to really ask if she's taking. And she will say yes. And after I have to go around with other questions, and sometimes they say, no, really, I didn't take.
Her patient Irma arrives and is led to the exam room. I follow closely behind.
¿Cómo se siente usted?
Bien.
¿Se siente bien? Sí. ¿Está tomando la medicina?
Sí.
Dr. Rios cuts her gaze away from Irma and towards me with a sly expression that says, sí, told you so.
¿No la ha parado ningún día? ¿O la ha parado algunos días?
Unos días porque he estado yendo mucho al baño en las madrugadas, 3-4 veces en la madrugada.
Está orinando más.
Entonces, he estado suspendido poco para que pueda dormir.
It seems like Irma is starting to give in to Dr. Rios. She's saying that there are nights that she skipped the medicine because she feared that it was keeping her up.
Bueno, porque, bueno, los resultados es que el colesterol está altísimo.
Sí.
Es como que no está tomando la medicina. Uh-huh. Entonces, okay. Usted piensa que puede ser por eso que está tan alto,
sí.
Porque no la está tomando.
Sí.
Okay. So, bueno.
Dr. Rios seems genuinely shocked that she was able to get Irma to admit she wasn't taking her medicine so quickly. And she tells Irma she's worried about her needing to get up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom, that it might be a sign of another problem, and so she's going to order some tests.
¿Quieres hablar más?
Sí. Perfecto.
Okay. Irma and I sit in an empty exam room.
¿Cómo está?
Bien.
Yo, la verdad, a mí no me gusta ir al doctor.
Sí, entiendo. Entiendo. Es algo... yo creo que... Bueno, por mi parte también así me daba mucho miedo venir al médico. Pero a la vez es bueno.
I close the door so we can talk privately.
Mi historia es algo cruda, pero vine porque no sabían dónde yo tenía que dirigirme.
I learned that there are things in Irma's life that are not so easily fixed just by taking the pills for cholesterol that Dr. Rios so desperately wants her to take. Irma opens up about very personal things, and even though I have her sign a consent form with her full name, all of the patients we spoke to did. Because of the nature of her story, we have decided not to include her last name.
¿Hace cuánto tiempo que está en los Estados Unidos?
Ya tengo como unos 12 años aquí.
When she arrived in the U.S., she started to work in housekeeping at a hotel in Evanston, Illinois, a wealthy suburb north of Chicago. But she stopped after something happened at her work.
Ahorita no estoy trabajando por toda esta secuela que he estado pasando. En mi trabajo hubo una violación física en mi persona. El manager me violaba en el trabajo.
Irma says that she was frequently raped by her manager.
Por el puesto que ocupaba, se sentía poderoso, sentía fuerte, sentía que... Él podía hacer lo que quería, y con amenazas.
Irma says that people at her job didn't support her and that many of her colleagues were facing similar treatment but couldn't speak up because they did not want to lose their jobs.
Yo las entiendo.
Yet finally, one day, she gathered courage to leave her job and filed a complaint with the local police.
Era muy fuerte para hablar y decidir yo hacer esto. Fue una decisión que me costó muchísimo trabajo por lo mismo de las amenazas, la presión que tenía de esa persona, de todo. No te imaginas.
She struggled to find help until learning about this place, Community Health.
Es muy triste que buscas lugares para que te apoyen y no hay presupuesto.
In addition to the doctor, she sees a therapist here. And with her help, she's been able to reframe what happened to her.
No perdí mi trabajo. Gané. Gané yo, de mi parte, la libertad de ser mujer, de expresar lo que había pasando ahí y luchar.
She's been here for only a year. She admits there's still a lot of work to be done.
Porque son pesadillas, son momentos que recuerdas que no se te pueden olvidar. El miedo, el temor de todo. Entonces, es difícil estar saliendo adelante para sacar todo esto y superarlo.
People who argue undocumented immigrants shouldn't have access to healthcare pose their position as one about lack of resources. Undocumented migrants are invaders coming to take advantage of our system, to use our benefits and take our jobs. But what this argument leaves out is the altogether common situation in which our system takes advantage of them. During our days at Community Health, we started to see how this one clinic is trying to treat patients by not just addressing their physical health, but also taking into consideration the system in which they live.
Coming up on Latino USA, we unpack the unique challenges of caring for the undocumented. Stay with us, no te vayas.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card, you can earn 5% back at Walmart online, 2% at Walmart in-store, restaurants and travel, and 1% everywhere else. When you want all that, you need the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. What's in your wallet? Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One N.A.
An American, a Russian, and a Ukrainian walk into a bar. No, this is not the impeachment hearings. It's a comedy competition in Ukraine. I'm Gregory Warner. The high stakes of comedy in a country led by a comedian.
It's a social mission to unite the country.
On Rough Translation from NPR.
Hey, we're back. And producers Sofia Paliza-Ca and Antonia Cerejido have been observing the inner workings of the largest free health clinic in the nation. Community Health is located in Chicago, and it only serves people without health insurance. Their most common diagnoses are high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and diabetes, three of the most common health problems in the U.S. And like doctors' offices across the country, this clinic treats the physical symptoms of these issues. But it also takes into account the very specific needs of their immigrant and often undocumented patients. Now, it's evening time at the Community Health Clinic in Chicago, and our producer, Sophia, is going to pick up this story from here.
The clinic normally has the quiet feeling of a doctor's office, in which sound is trapped in the carpet of the waiting room and doctors speak in soothing tones. But there are certain periods of time when the quiet clinic becomes a classroom. In the evening, dozens of medical students come from nearby universities. They see patients and write up their charts.
And she started on insulin activity.
And a few of them hang out in the blood lab.
Some centrifuges are running. We're running a couple of vials that patients have given us to test their blood.
You say that like it's, you're like blood, like in a horror movie.
I know, right? I'm Count Dracula, basically. No, yeah.
In the back room is Itzel Lopez, Tyler McSanick, and Craig Johnson. Or as Tyler puts it.
This is the original squad.
On their first rotation at the clinic, they were all assigned together. They primarily are responsible for drawing patients' blood in order to test for STIs and blood sugar.
So what year are you in med school?
First year. Well, we're rising second years. We're in our summer before the rest of our lives.
All three of them are in the process of considering their next steps after medical school. And it turns out, Itzel isn't new to community health.
So I took a gap year in between graduating undergrad and then coming to medical school, and I interpreted here.
Itzel's parents are immigrants.
So as like the cultural and like linguistic broker, I was often in those clinical spaces with them and just realizing how special and vulnerable those conversations can be and how difficult sometimes and how things get missed.
What she saw made her want to be a doctor, especially a bilingual doctor.
As soon as you speak their language, even if you don't look like them, they're like, oh my gosh. Like they bring in their kids and their kids don't have to interpret anymore and they don't have to go through this weird, awkward exchange. So it's important to me and I really hope, whether it's here in Chicago or anywhere else, that I do serve a largely Latino population.
Language is a major issue at the clinic. Their patients speak 34 different languages, though more than half of them prefer to have their exams in Spanish. And while several doctors speak more than one language, like Dr. Rios, the clinic does have volunteer interpreters. The interpreters can be found sitting in a row of bright orange chairs at the center of the clinic. Like soccer players on a bench, they wait to be called into the fray.
Yes, I am grading papers. I'm teaching summer school, and I grade papers while I wait.
This is Will Hester. He's a Spanish teacher and a certified medical interpreter.
It's a Spanish 101 class, so they had to write letters to an imaginary pen pal.
I asked him how he got into interpreting.
I was looking for some place to volunteer, and my husband said, you need to go to this clinic and you need to serve. And I said, oh, I can't do it. I don't know the word for elbow. You know, and my husband said, go get a book, learn the word. And that's what I did.
Will approaches interpreting a specific way. Like, he's not just trying to convey the meaning of words. He's trying to create a more equitable world.
My job is to allow our Spanish-speaking patients to have the same access to the U.S. healthcare system as do patients who speak English, and to put them on an equal footing, because what's important in that moment is the connection between the physician and the patient. The interpreter is an important part, but we should be an important part in the background.
In other words, his mission is to convey a patient's words and emotions as accurately as possible. And Antonia got to see him put these very principles in action.
I'm sitting in on an exam with a patient named Eluterio. He's trying to explain to his doctor, Nazia Babel, that he's getting blisters under his teeth. He opens his mouth wide. Dr. Babel is proficient in Spanish and can understand that there's something wrong with Eluterio's teeth, but she can't figure out exactly what he's trying to say. And so she steps outside momentarily to bring Will in.
Can I pre-session?
Oh, sure.
Hola, me llamo Will, soy intérprete. Voy a ayudarle a comunicar directamente con ellos. Pueden hablar directamente ellos como si uno estuviera. Muy bien.
Will begins translating for Eluterio, and he does it like he's an actor embodying a new role. He talks in the first person.
So I was going to ask if I could get some better because there have been some blisters to come up under the teeth.
Okay. With this information, I'm going to take it back to the clinic coordinator.
Con esta información que me ha dado, voy a consultar con la coordinadora de la clínica para determinar si necesita ir urgentemente al dentista, por ejemplo, hoy, o si se puede esperar unos días.
Sí, me puedo esperar unos días.
I can wait a few days.
A ver cómo me siento, pero no digo que ya me siento bien, si no podía comer.
I feel fine, it's that I couldn't eat.
It feels like Will is the human version of Clippy, that digital paper clip that used to show up on Word documents. Will is very helpful.
Muy bien. Okay. Gracias para su tiempo.
Eleuterio seems very at home at the doctor's.
¿Te costó ir al doctor? No, no. Pero mucha gente se dice, ah, que voy, pues si, si me muero, que me muera.
Pero bueno.
Ya cuando se sienten malos, sí van. Uh-huh. Sí, pero pues, no, a mí no me costó. Yo siempre he venido.
¿Y por qué quiso venir a los Estados Unidos?
Pues porque una vida mejor aquí en Estados Unidos.
¿Ustedes son ciudadanos?
No. Uh-huh. No me voy a ir a reportar.
No. We're not using Eleuterio's last name because of his status. As you can tell, he's a pretty easygoing guy, but he's had to face a lot of challenges. For as long as he's been in the U.S., he's had diabetes, and he's had to manage it along with other health problems, mostly due to his work.
¿Y a qué se dedica?
Soy dishwasher.
¿Dishwasher? ¿Hace cuánto tiempo?
También ya tengo, desde que vine, desde el 25 años.
¿25 años? ¿En el mismo restaurante?
No. Trabajé en el Benihana, trabajé en uno que se llamaba el de Davis.
Eleuterio wears special compression socks that go up to his knees to help with circulation because he stands for so long during his job. He also puts on creams and lotions at night to help deal with the pain. But he says his circumstance doesn't compare to what his family in Mexico has dealt with recently.
Ya nos han matado tres sobrinos. Sí. Se metieron a los sicarios y todo eso. Mm. Pero pues el que entra ahí ya no sabe.
He says this is why he brought his family to the U.S. His nephews were only 19 and 20 when they got involved with sicarios, or hitmen. And he feared his children would find a similar end.
Bien feo, los mataron y luego... Y al último que mataron, nomás la cara se la desfiguraron con un cuchillo, yo creo. Toda la cara para que no lo conocieran.
Ay, qué feo.
Lo conocieron por un tatuaje que traía en una mano.
His fear was heightened because he already lost a son in Mexico, not to the drug war, but because of a freak accident.
El primero se me quemó. De dos años me cayó en una tina de agua hirviendo y se quemó, se coció todo este bracito. Era el mayor.
¿Y se murió?
Sí, no aguantó el dolor. No aguantó el corazón del dolor que tenía.
During Eleuterio's exam, Dr. Babel asked if he'd be interested in seeing other specialists, including a mental health counselor.
¿Quieres hablar con personas sobre de problemas que usted tienes?
Pues si me la dan, porque sí.
Sí, okay.
The counselor's room is three doors down from where Eleuterio and I are sitting. The room has a surreal quality. When a patient is inside the counselor's room, no one can hear what they're saying because for privacy, there's a white noise machine sitting just outside. But if you were able to see inside, you would see something very unusual. Even though there are no windows, there are dozens of living plants, mostly bamboo. The counselor whose office it is jokes that the plants live off of love. It is in this room that Irma, the housekeeper we heard from earlier, once shared her story and started to find a personal sense of justice. It's where Eleuterio might tell his story one day. It's a room where living beings, plants without sunlight, people without status, can grow.
Coming up, the last patient we hear from at Community Health. Stay with us, no te vayas.
This week on Ask Me Another, singer Paula Cole surprises us with one of her lesser-known talents.
Do you do any bird calls?
Well... Perfect.
What is going on?
This and more on NPR's Ask Me Another. Listen now.
We're back. And for the last few days, producers Sofia Paliza Carr and Antonia Cerejido have gotten to watch how community health works, from how they deal with patients who are more comfortable in a different language to patients with mental health issues. But despite the clinic's breadth of services, they've learned that many of the providers actually wish the clinic didn't exist at all. Sofia Paliza Carr takes it from here.
In total, we spent 3 days at Community Health. And over the course of that time, we talked to a lot of patients who were happy with their care. And many of them had been coming to this same clinic for years, decades even. Community Health treats over 8,000 people a year. And the reason why they can do that is because they're privately funded. That means they're supported by individuals, but also by huge networks like the University of Chicago Medical School and giant pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer. It takes an army to make it run. Remember, they have over 1,000 volunteers.
I think Community Health does a very nice job of using all the different types of providers in a really innovative way. And I think that that type of innovation needs to be part of our national conversation about health policy.
This is Margaret Bavis, a nurse practitioner at Community Health and an assistant professor at Rush University. And while she's very proud of the work the clinic does, she tells me that she and other providers sometimes feel conflicted about their work.
The founder of Community Health, Dr. Gorello, when he was here last year for the 25th anniversary, and he has since passed away, but he, in his speech at our celebration, made a statement about how he wished we didn't need to exist. And I always think about that and kind of take that to heart.
And she echoed a thought we had heard from several of the doctors here, that community health is just a stopgap.
To that end, you know, can we replicate this everywhere? And should we have to? I mean, can we get the discussion to include everybody, regardless of status?
Dr. Bavis believes healthcare should be a human right. But she points out to me that even if you don't believe that, there's a public health argument to be made. When diseases spread, they don't discriminate.
If we don't give everybody the opportunity for measles vaccination, then we're putting ourselves at risk. If we don't give everybody an opportunity to have access to healthcare, we're putting everybody at risk around us.
But undocumented communities aren't just dealing with infectious diseases. There's an inherent stress in trying to navigate our country's immigration system. The final patient we're going to meet is Maria Magaña. Dr. Emily Hendel swivels around her computer screen to show Maria her blood tests.
Su diabetes fue muy bien controlada. Estoy haciendo muy bien.
Maria has the vibe of someone who grew up getting gold stars for perfect attendance.
Su colesterol en total fue 124. Normal es menos que 200.
Oh,
pues eso
okay.
Es perfecto.
And she takes that optimistic energy into an interview with me.
How long have you been coming here?
Wow. I've been here since 1996.
Maria has been living in Chicago for 28 years, though she's originally from Mexico City. But she didn't get her legal residency until a few years ago. Having her papers now should mean that she can sign up for health care.
I could apply for that, but for a while, I can. I have to wait 5 years, and I only have 3 years.
Maria wants to apply for Medicaid, and as a permanent resident, she can do that. But instead of doing that, she wants to wait 5 years until she can become a naturalized citizen first, before she tries to get health care. She switches to Spanish to better explain her concern.
Podría esperar, pero prefiero no agarrar. Ahora dicen que cualquier residente legal que pida ayuda pública, tanto Medicaid, food stamps y otro requerimiento de medicina, eres carga pública y no podrías calificar para la ciudadanía.
What she's talking about here are changes that the Trump administration has proposed to make it more difficult for migrants to seek green cards. The idea was that if migrants applied for benefits like Medicaid or food stamps, they could be seen as a public charge, meaning dependent on the government and therefore ineligible for residency. The rule was supposed to go into effect in October of this year, but it was struck down by several federal judges. And actually, the rule wouldn't apply to people like Maria because she's already a permanent resident. But there has been so much confusion around this new rule that many immigrants have dropped their housing, food, or medical benefits out of fear.
With the Obamacare gonna be a nightmare for us.
Maria has considered getting covered through the Affordable Care Act instead of Medicaid. But she tells me she can't afford it.
It was so expensive. It'd say, okay, I pay the insurance or I pay my rent. The immigration situation for our community is crazy, completely crazy. Yo no puedo conducir. No puedo conducir porque me dan nervios. Y empiezo a sudar, me sudan las manos, me suda el cuerpo y tiemblo. Voy así. El volante me duele las manos cuando ya termino porque el estrés es muy alto. Y eso me da ansiedad, mucha ansiedad.
And that anxiety is what many of the patients we talk to face in their everyday lives. From the beginning of our time here, we wanted to know what it would look like if undocumented people weren't excluded from our healthcare system. And we observed what a difference it makes to have interpreters who care, free medicine, and access to mental health treatment. But this is just one clinic, and even though it's the biggest free clinic, it serves less than 100 people a day. There are 11 million undocumented immigrants across the United States. Maria says the way people think about immigrants in this country is all wrong.
Solo, pues, trabajamos. Quizá un trabajo que no quieren hacer, pues nosotros lo hacemos, lo cogemos y lo hacemos. Porque en América tú eres cero. Somos nada. Y eso es lo que mata y frustra a las personas.
She says in America, we're worth nothing. And that's what kills and frustrates people.
Y estamos enfermos.
At 6 p.m., the clinic closes down for the day. Even though we won't be around to chase patients down the corridors with our microphones, tomorrow, community health will reopen the doors and start the cycle again.
Looks legit. All right.
Awesome. Thank you.
Our thanks to the many patients, staff, and volunteers at Community Health who spoke with us, especially those who allowed us into very intimate moments in their lives. This story was produced by Antonia Cerejido and Sofia Palizacá and edited by Fernanda Camarena. Additional reporting by Maggie Freeling. The Latino USA team includes Niel Macias, Janice Yamoka, and Alisa Escarce, with help from Ginny Montalvo and Joanne De Luna. Fact-checking for this episode by Nidia Bautista. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelhot. Our digital team includes Julio Ricardo Varela and Amanda Alcántara. Our interns are Adriana Tapia and Juan Diego Ramirez. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Latino USA is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
You're also a member of a book club?
It's no book club. We call it anti-book club. I was in a book club, and this is a group of all ladies who were a little grumpy old ladies, I say, and the books were more like weapons. So I say, that's enough. I left the group. And, well, this will be the anti-book club. And we get together once a month, we make dinner, and we watch a movie. And we, the most important is to treat each other really nice.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, after Hurricane Maria, an eccentric community of cryptocurrency investors arrives in Puerto Rico with promises to change everything.
This is a decentralized movement. I'm not aware of anyone building any gated community. I think
it's happening now!
But what do Puerto Ricans think about that? That's next time on Latino USA.